Jesus said, "Judge not that you be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, 'Let me remove the speck out of your eye,' and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck out of your brother's eye. Do not give what is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn and tear you in pieces."
Don't have an opportunity to stand before you on Sunday evening very often, so I appreciate this opportunity in Joe's absence to speak this evening. Matthew chapter 7 is our text, and we're looking tonight what I thought would be a good follow-up to our study this morning. We're going to be looking at this particular text as well as a few other verses, so I encourage you to open your Bibles as we study tonight. Of course, this morning, if you remember, we looked at James chapter 2, and we looked at favoritism. And we looked at that not only in our lesson out here, but in the adult classes that are participating this quarter as well. And actually there in James chapter 2, let's read once again. Keep your place marked there in Matthew. But let's look at verse 4. James chapter 2 and verse 4. I'll be reading tonight from the New International Version. Verse 4 says, "Had you not discriminated among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts?" Uses the word judges. When we think of judges or judging or anything that has to do with judging, I think we automatically think of this scripture in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 1. And I'm sure you've heard it quoted time and time again. "Do not judge or you too will be judged." In fact, you've probably heard some people who know very little or who you think you judge to know very little about the Bible maybe use that verse. "Don't judge me. You know, now look, I've got a reason here, scripture that backs me up. Says, don't you look at me and judge me." You've heard that quoted and maybe misused from time to time. And some even say now it's quoted more than John chapter 3 and verse 16. So one of the better known verses in the New Testament right here in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 1. But have you ever made a mistake before? Any of us ever made a mistake? I could probably think of several just today. This week I found some pretty interesting mistakes that have been made throughout time. A famous ball player for the New York Giants in 1895 named Mark Grady, and he played third base. Now, I wouldn't expect anyone here to remember 1895. That was a few years before our time. But in one play, a routine grounder to third base, he missed the grounder, had to run get it, then he overthrew the first base. Well, the first baseman tracked the ball down, threw it back to him at third base to try and catch the runner who advanced on the fumbled ground play. Well, Mike Grady on third base missed the throw that the first baseman threw to him. So he had to go retrieve it. The runner was headed home, so guess what Mike Grady did? He overthrew the catcher at home. You know, sort of a bad day for Mike Grady. Some four mistakes on what seemed to be a routine out. Do we sometimes have that happen in our lives? Also, be careful if your King James Version was printed in the year 1716. That particular year, the printer made a flagrant mistake, and in John chapter 5 and verse 14, the final copy that year read, "Sin on more," rather than "Sin no more." So, kind of an obvious mistake, and I wonder if sometimes we're still using that edition. That's but a mistake there by the printer in the year 1716. And then one that maybe is a little bit closer to home. The story was told of a businessman who wanted to send a floral arrangement to a friend who was opening a new branch office. So his friend called later in the day to thank him for the considerate gesture, but he said, "I'm a little bit puzzled. When I got the card, which came along with the arrangement, it said, 'Rest in peace.' Well, the businessman apologized for the mix-up, and he quickly got on the phone. And he talked to the florist, and the florist was trying to console him. And he said, well, that's nothing, because somewhere in the cemetery there's a bouquet reading, good luck in your new location. So, you know, we have mix-ups from time to time, don't we? There are certain things that just some mistakes that are made, some honest mistakes. I sent Carrie a balloon the other day saying happy birthday and didn't even look at the back. She turned it around when I finally looked at it and said, birthday boy. I didn't look at the back. I only looked at the front. So sometimes we make those mistakes. And throughout Christian history, I think it's obvious that people have made mistakes on their interpretation of Scripture. And you'll have someone spout off and say, don't you judge. It says it right there in Matthew 7:1, don't judge me. We're going to look at that tonight. See exactly what we can learn from these first six verses. Part of the Sermon on the Mount. About 142 words if you're reading from the NIV, but a very, very concise and just a whole lot there in those six individual verses. You know, in the late 70s and the early 80s, a term which is common today came into existence, that of being politically correct. Political correctness, or being politically correct, and that seemed to change the way in which we look at things. Sort of opened some gray area, if you will, because we always want to be politically correct. We never want to offend anyone. We never want to do something that's going to step on someone's toes. We want to be politically correct. And you've heard that phrase now for the last 20 plus years, almost 30 years now, being used from time to time. You must be politically correct. And I think that kind of sifted over into our Christian life as well. You've got to be politically correct. We no longer call a crook. We call them morally and ethically challenged. We call a bald person comb-free. We call blind visually challenged. We call a bum a displaced homeowner. We call a clumsy person uniquely coordinated. We call a drug addict chemically challenged. A homeless person, an outdoor urban dweller. We call a lazy person motivationally deficient. A short person vertically challenged. And wrong, differently logical. We don't even say right and wrong any longer. It's not politically correct to say wrong. We say differently logical. So I think we've brought that over into this idea, don't you judge me. I can't be wrong. You've got to be politically correct with me. You've got to handle me with kid gloves. Don't judge my life. Part of that may be correct, and we'll look at that in just a moment. You know, a few years ago, a congregation of the Lord's Church in Oklahoma disfellowshipped one of their members for immorality. And, of course, this made all of the local headlines, the newspapers, even made it to some talk TV shows. And this, of course, kind of dates it, but I believe it was on the Donahue show that basically the attitude of the audience and Phil Donahue himself summed it up in these words, judge not that you be not judged. How often has that been misused? You know, it bothers me to hear someone use Matthew 7 and verse 1 that way. But you see, it's nice to have a verse to prove what you already want to believe. And I think that's how this verse has been used time and time again. It's been used to convey the idea, you live your lifestyle and I'll live mine. But don't you tell me to how to live, and certainly don't you try to impose your standards of morality on me. Let me live my life and you live yours. I think we need to maybe look back. What Jesus is saying here in Matthew chapter 7, I think one of the key verses in understanding that, turn back to chapter 5 and verse 20. Of course, the Pharisees, a group of folks that we read a lot about, especially here in Matthew. And notice what he says here in chapter 5 and verse 20. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. We must have a different kind of righteousness from that of the scribes and the Pharisees. They wore theirs on their sleeves. It was superficial. So I think if you boil it all down, we're looking here at Matthew 7. And this context, the Sermon on the Mount, deals here with two different extremes. The problem of human judgment. And the first extreme is the harsh, critical spirit that maybe some were using that term. And the second extreme is that of permissiveness. Don't you tell me what to do. Don't try to get any part of my life. Don't you try to enforce any of your morality on me. I live like I want to. So you see the two extremes. How do we break that down? How do we bring this and say, okay, this is what this passage is saying? I want to look at three short ideas regarding this passage tonight. First of all, verses 1 and 2. We've read this. We're going to break this down. Verse 1 says, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use it, it will be measured to you." You know, as Jesus looked at the religious situation of His day, He saw that judging others had become a great problem. And the Pharisees and scribes sat in the place, or sat as the critics, and were just saying, "Hey, look, you guys are messing up. You're not doing everything just right. You've made some mistakes." They were quick to pass judgment on those who didn't live up to their expectations. When Jesus was in the house of Simon the Pharisee and the sinful woman anointed at His feet, Simon said, and this is recorded for us in Luke chapter 7 and verse 39, "If this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner." The Pharisees had basically got a new group of people, a new class of people, the sinners. He talked about those who weren't living right, those who weren't doing the right thing, living sinful lives, bringing judgment upon them. The Pharisees were used to judging others self-righteously. Jesus said that there are problems with that kind of judging. It's overly critical, always going around with a nitpicking attitude, and of course digging and searching for faults, always suspecting the worst. You know, whenever we make a judgment, we do so based on what we've seen. I can't see everything. I can't be all places at all times. Likewise, no one here in this audience can. But we base our judgments on what we see. Think about that for just a moment. Have you ever based a judgment on something that you've seen and then later find out the rest of the story and say, "Wow, I was way off base. Wow, I didn't even come close to what I thought." As I go out on hospital visits, of course, two main hospitals here in town, and you don't have to be around someone very long until you can find out if they really enjoy what they're doing. And the folks that work at the hospitals are no different. You can see they either really love their job or they really don't like their job very much. I want to mention just one name because this gentleman does an outstanding job. He's one of the volunteers at Cox South. His name's Val. If you're ever visiting Cox South and you run into Val, you know that you're going to be treated in the best way possible. He's just going to do whatever he can do to help you. Well, I ran into another gentleman at one of the hospitals, and I had kind of developed a relationship with him. And I would go in about the same time every morning, and he was always there, and he would barely look up from the computer to help me find a patient room. So one day I said to this gentleman, I said, "You really don't like your job, do you?" I was making a judgment. I said, "You really don't enjoy what you're doing." He looked up at me and he said, "I'm very lucky to be here." And then he listed about five terrible things that had happened in his lifetime. Five things that he was suffering with. I said, "You're right." Said, "Keep up the work. Just keep trying." I guess I would question at that point the human resource department for putting him right there in front of John Q. Public. But he was really struggling. And I didn't know that. I had no idea what he was putting up with or having to go through. Young people, you see that too in your classes. You see that at school. You'll make a judgment and then you might really get to know the situation and think, "Wow, way off base." And sometimes we do that. And that's, I think, what we need to especially guard against here. You know, there was a story about a newspaper reporter. It's one of my favorite examples of what we're talking about here. This reporter was searching for a story about laziness that existed throughout the South. When he saw a man in the field, and he was sitting in a chair hoeing his weeds. So this reporter was excited. "Here I found a man that's so lazy he won't even get up out of his chair." So he ran over to interview the guy, walked around to the front of his chair. The gentleman had no legs. That did as a reporter. Sometimes we make judgments before we know the whole story. That goes to show the limits of what we sometimes see in other people. God once made the point in 1 Samuel chapter 16 and verse 7, "Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." Verses 1 and 2, "Judge not." Let's read on though for just a moment. Verses 3 through 5. So often we find ourselves searching for these specks. And it says, "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. You know, we have read that time and time again. But do we think about that? Do we really think about what we're reading? You know, there's another problem with Pharisaic righteousness. Not only was it overcritical, but it was also hypocritical. Worried about the speck when there was a plank in their eye. Brought a process about it. Everybody, you all know this. It's a two before. But think about this for just a minute. You know, if I'm to stand up here and say, Warren, I see that speck of sawdust back there in your eye. How crazy is that? And think about the humor in that. You know, here's a plank in my eye, something this big sticking in my eye, and I'm trying to point out a fault in someone else. Jesus was telling the Pharisees, this is exactly what's going on. What are you doing in your life? You're trying to point out something in your life that's so, so messed up. We sometimes look for sex. You know, in the Peanuts comic strip, Linus asks Lucy, you all have read that, why are you always so anxious to criticize me? Lucy answered, I just think that I have a knack for seeing other people's faults. Well, what about your own faults, asks Linus. And her response is, I have a knack for overlooking them. And we often do, don't we? We have a knack for overlooking our lives. We can see past this plank, see beyond that, and look for the sawdust, the speck in a brother's eye. You know, think about that illustration or the example that Jesus used. Jesus being very familiar with the world of carpentry, and probably those in that day and age could see the humor in that. Jesus said, here's this big plank, yet you overlook that and look for this little bitty speck in a brother's eye. How hypocritical. The Pharisees were, number one, too critical. Always looking. Always there at every turn, every corner, saying, aha, I got you. And then hypocritical in doing as well. You know, it's important for us to notice that Jesus didn't stop there. He didn't instruct us to stay out of other people's business. Rather, He gave us the responsibility of helping our brother. First, remove the plank from your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye there in verse 5. There are examples of biblical judging. Paul talks about it in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 19. Also, 2 Timothy 3, 16. John mentions it in 1 John chapter 4 and verse 1. And Jesus, here in Matthew chapter 7, on down in verse 15, speaks of that as well. He says, watch for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. We've got to watch out. We realize we can't be oblivious to everything. We have to watch for these things. And in so doing, we're going to make some judgments, aren't we? We're going to make some discernment. What attitude do we have in doing such? I think chapter 7 and verse 6 maybe talks about here the right way to judge. He says, do not give to the dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to the pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and then turn and tear you to pieces. What's that verse talking about? What's that all about? It talks about dogs. And pigs, and what might happen if you give in to such group. Actually, here he's saying, do not judge, but down here in verse 6, he's saying, well, now you're going to have to make some judgments because there's folks like this. You're going to come into certain situations, and the harsh critical spirit is obviously wrong. And some have tried to get so far away from it that they've gone to the opposite extreme. They just give in to everything. It says everything is okay, everything's permissive. The holders of this position point to the first five verses of the chapter is their proof text, don't judge. They stress long and loud that we cannot judge, but they interpret that as meaning we cannot judge in any case, and especially don't try to tell me when I'm doing anything wrong. That's sort of the interpretation that you get maybe from the first part of that. But an interesting situation arises when somebody takes this position. They believe that they can't judge anyone else as being right or wrong, and so they have no right to condemn the way anyone is living. And if you're doing that, of course, you're wrong, and that you shouldn't live that way. Thus, they practice the very thing they claim is wrong for others. So you see the difference here? Do not judge, but then he says, watch out for these people. Watch out and don't find yourself with them. And basically, I think when he's talking about dogs and pigs, he's talking about those who are enemies to the gospel. Those who are hard enemies to the gospel and are not going to give in. not going to listen, not going to change, not going to do anything? Are we not told in other places that we're to shake the dust off of our feet? Go on. Are we making a judgment in that case?
Using our time wisely.
Using our time in areas and energy in areas that we can do some good and be heard. How can these two positions be reconciled? The two positions actually complement and limit each other perfectly. In the first statement, as we've already seen, Jesus condemns the critical, holier-than-thou, jumping to conclusion sort of judgment that the Pharisees were known for. But in the second statement, there in verse 6, Jesus acknowledges the need for making decisions concerning people and behavior that's detrimental to our Christian life. That's what he's talking about there in verse 6. In John chapter 7 and verse 24, Jesus said, "Do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment." Stand up. Make some calls. Stand firm. Don't always be politically correct. Don't always give in. Call right right and wrong wrong, yet do it in a loving way. Jesus gives us a great example in John chapter 8 of how we're to judge, of how we're to treat others. You all know this story. Jesus is confronted by a mob pushing before it a woman that was caught in an act of adultery. And of course, the mob tried to use her as if she were a thing. The mob tried to use her in order to trap Jesus. And the Jewish law said that she must die. The Roman law said that she couldn't be killed without their permission. There was never any doubt about her guilt. There was also not any doubt about the seriousness of her action. She had done something wrong. She had been caught in that act. How did Jesus handle that situation? So what did Jesus do when confronted by the sinner? First, he refused to look down on her. He didn't point his finger and said, "Look what's happened to you. Look what you've done." Rather, he forced the mob to consider their own sin. What's that old saying? One finger pointing out has four pointing back at you. What's your life like? What's my life like? And yet I try to judge. And yet I try to do certain things. Do we find ourselves like the Pharisee? Do we find ourselves with that critical attitude? Do we find ourselves being hypocritical? Or do we find ourselves making the right decision, the right discernment, the right judgment? There's one verse in James. Let's get back over to James that I'd like to close with this evening. Verse 13. In our class this morning, we looked at verses 1 through 13. And the very last verse says, "Because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful." Mercy triumphs over judgment. One of the versions reads, "Mercy trumps over judgment." I want to have that thing that trumps. I want that card that will trump. What does James says that is? Mercy. Famous song that was recorded three years ago by a group called Mercy Me, simply entitled "Mercy Came Running." Jesus comes running to us. Jesus doesn't point a finger and say, "Look what you all have done. Look how you've lived your life. Look at all the mistakes you've made." And he could do that. We've made some mistakes. He could go right down that list and say, "You've messed up here, Dwight, and right here, and right here, and oh, I'm going to have to add a second page, a third page." Mercy came running. Jesus wants us to come to Him. Jesus said mercy trumps over judgment. The challenge this week is when you go out and you're in your everyday world, whether that's work, school, whatever situation you'll find yourself in, don't be too judgmental. Don't make a judgment on something before you know a situation or a circumstance. And instead of making a judgment, go to someone and say, "Can I help you? Is there something I can do? Is there some assistance that I could give you this very day?" Jesus was confronted by the sinner, but he forgave her and challenged her to stop sinning. I think that's important. He didn't say, "Okay, it's okay, just go on and do whatever." He said, "Don't do that anymore. But you go on. You go on from here and do the best you can." He's telling us that tonight. He's saying, "You go from here and do the best you can." You may be in our audience tonight and haven't done the best that you could do up to this point. We're going to be judged someday. Someday we're going to stand before that throne and things are going to be laid wide open. But we have opportunity tonight to do something to make that right. Jesus running to us. Just visualize that, if you will, with open arms. Come back to me. Come back and be a part of my family. And that invitation is open tonight. If you're subject to that invitation, won't you come and stand in prayer?